And now stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who is guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's strange story, The Other Hand.
As he turned the brass knob of the heavy oaken door and stepped into the lobby, Clint Markham realized that the doctor was right. That now, with final proofs okayed on Clint's first big series of articles for the magazine, he needed complete rest and quiet. An Oakdale sanitarium was the place to get it. The day's supervisor, a scrub-looking gray-haired woman in an immaculate white uniform, was talking on the telephone behind the counter as he entered.
Yes, Doctor, we have everything ready for him. That's right. The first floor room in the east wing looking out on the garden. We'll have complete quiet. Just a moment, please. Yes, sir.
I'm Clint Markham.
Oh, Mr. Markham. I'm talking to Dr. Grosvenor on the phone right now. The doctor would like to speak to you, Mr. Markham. Here you are.
Thank you. Hello, Doctor.
Clint? Glad you showed up. Thought for a while you weren't going to be sensible.
I know when I'm licked. I woke this morning tied up in a hard knot.
Well, you've got a bad stomach there, Clint. Might easily turn into something serious.
I know.
I've given the complete instructions here. To have absolute quiet for a week. Longer, if possible. That means no business, no interruptions of any kind.
Right.
Now, you've got to cooperate with this, you know.
I'm aware of that.
I hope you are. Well, that's it, Clint. Good luck.
Thanks. Goodbye, Doctor. That's that. I suppose the entire staff is completely informed on my situation.
Well, Dr. Grosvenor was rather explicit.
I thought so. I suppose you show me to my private cell, huh? I'm sorry, nurse. I can't eat a bite of this dinner.
You've got the first day jitters. It'll take you a little time to relax.
What about calls? Anyone phoned me this afternoon?
Well, we've had instructions not...
Oh, come on now. Who was it?
Miss Susan Forrest.
Huh? Oh, what'd you say?
She said at 9 tonight she'd be at a little place called Rodolfo's at 8th and Greenway. I explained, of course, that you couldn't be there.
Good. She needs to be told no once in a while. Take this tray away, will you? I think I'll try and sleep.
You're being very sensible, Mr. Markham. I'll leave this sleeping pill for you.
I don't want to be disturbed under any circumstances until tomorrow morning. Take care of that, will you?
Of course. Good night, Mr. Markham.
Good night.
The minutes tick by as you lie in the quiet darkness, telling yourself how ridiculous it was of Susan to expect you to leave the sanitarium and meet her. But you finally decide you can't dismiss her like that. Yes, Clint. Susan's not only an exciting girl, but a very important one at the moment. And sanitarium or no, she likes to have her way. You decide that it would be best to see her. At 8:30, you're back in your clothes, thankful you were given a room on the first floor. And to avoid an argument in the lobby, you leave by the French windows leading out through the garden to the street beyond.
Taxi!
Rodolfo's, 8th and Greenway.
But...
Oh, Lenore.
Hello, darling.
I didn't expect to see you here, Lenore.
I expected to see you. Sit down.
I'm sorry I have an appointment.
Susan Forrest will be late. She always is.
How did you know?
Miss Forrester stopped by the office to find out where you were. She called the hospital from there. Waiter.
Yes, ma'am.
A pair of old fashions, please. Sit down, Glenn. Surely you've a moment to spare for your loyal and loving secretary.
Look, Lenore, there's no point in hashing it all over again. You've got to understand that
I know, darling, you're a sick man. Getting the articles in shape, making the right deal with just the right publisher has been tough. We're going to be just good friends from now on.
Let's not be sarcastic.
I was great as a pal and buddy until Susie came along. The little gal with a big punch. Why don't you be honest, Frank?
I've tried to be.
The only thing Susan Forrest has got that I haven't is a father who runs a successful magazine. Why don't you admit it?
I don't want to discuss it, that's all.
I wish you would.
But why? Why should we go?
Then don't you see what a fool she's making of you?
No, I don't. Oh. Besides, what does that have to do with us?
That's why I came here tonight. I want an answer.
Well, what kind of an answer do you want?
About you and me.
I've already told you.
That's final?
Yes, Lenore.
You're sure?
Absolutely.
Sorry, Clint. Sorry you decided this way.
What does that mean?
I don't think you know me very well, Clint. Not really. I fight for what I want. And if I lose, I might as well warn you. I don't give up gracefully.
If you're thinking of exposing me, I might as well tell you. Nobody's going to believe that you wrote most of those articles. Besides...
Too old-fashioned.
Oh, thanks. Here you are.
Thank you, sir.
Well?
I should have known it would be this way. My mother ran to railroad men. I run to heel.
I think I've been fair enough with you.
Fair? The articles were my idea. I worked them out.
Frankly, I didn't expect to seem like this. I thought we understood each other. You've been given a fair salary, and after all, we're adults.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not going to jump off a bridge yet.
Well, I should hope not.
It's a hard problem, but there are answers, you know.
I started to tell you, Lenore, threatening to expose me won't work.
Keep it. Looking for a cigarette?
Well, I seem to be out.
You need one. You're shaking like a Model T. Here, have one of mine.
No.
Light?
Thanks.
All right.
Oh! What was that?
Flash bulb. Photographer.
I just caught your picture, folks. Have it ready for you in about 10 minutes. 4x6 print for a dollar.
Not now. And... I don't want any souvenirs of this. Is this my drink?
Yes. Go on, Clint. Finish your drink and we'll order another.
No, thanks. No more. With this stomach of mine, I've lost my taste for liquor. Besides, that one will give me enough trouble.
About the picture...
Please, go away. I said not tonight. Excuse me, Lenore. I'll go over and get some cigarettes.
But it's not the cigarettes, is it, Clint? You have to get away from Lenore for a moment to think. As you fumble with the levers on the cigarette machine...
At this season of goodwill toward men, I'd like to reserve these valuable seconds for a little later in the program, in order to have time to bring you a message about one of your neighbors. A message which I hope will serve to further strengthen the bond of understanding and friendship between you and him.
John, it was quite a shock coming home from several years in the merchant marine to find your childhood sweetheart married to Captain Daniel Bailey, wasn't it? But you're certain Carrie still loves you, aren't you? And you tell yourself that things will soon be much different, especially now that you've made sure where the old...
She's coming home soon. I don't want her to... Oh, excuse me. Hello? Mom? No. Not now, can I discuss it? No. All right, later.
Just interested in me, huh?
Oh, Clint, this
is... I'm through. That was Marty Davis, wasn't it? Leg man for that newspaper columnist. What's he paying you for the exposure picture?
Well, Clint...
Literary frauds come pretty high, Lenore. I take it you haven't given him everything yet, or he wouldn't be calling back. Haven't named names yet, huh?
No, I haven't named names. I
heard what you said.
I told you once it won't work, and I meant it.
I'm not telling anyone about you. Not the papers, not Susan Forrester. I don't have to. Now, just get out of here, please.
Oh, no, I'm not leaving until
you
I...
You are leaving right now.
Put that down.
You
give me that.
Let go.
Try to ruin me, will you?
You...
The next few minutes are a blank. Impressions, visions, images, colors, swirling up like a whirlpool in your mind. Then your head clears. You find yourself moving mechanically, wiping your fingerprints from the heavy candlestick. Later, you find yourself running blindly down a darkened street. You remember the sanitarium, the open French doors, the room you can return to without being missed, the one way out. A moment later, you're climbing in a cab. And as the driver pulls away from the curb, you try and calm yourself. Stop the blood from pounding in your brain. Still the agonizing pain in your stomach. You're sure there's no way they can connect your being with her tonight, Clint. No one could possibly have recognized you together. Your eye wanders to the back of the cab seat, the driver's license, his picture. Then everything freezes inside you as you remember something.
Stop! Stop the car. I forgot something.
Hey, wait a minute. Do I wait for you?
Oh, no. Here you are. Keep the change.
You hurry back to Rodolfo's, your mind focused on the thing you forgot. The one thing that can hang you.
That photographer. I've got to get that picture.
Since only 13 shopping days remain until Christmas, I have a brilliant last-minute idea. There's no finer present than a switch for that forgotten name on your gift list. The forgotten name I'm referring to is your car, and the switch I'm suggesting is a switch to Signal. You'll all agree, I'm sure, that Signal must have something to have grown so in popularity from a small start in Southern California into an organization of independent dealers serving 7 Pacific Coast states from Canada to Mexico. You also know about Signal's good mileage that has made it known as the Go Farther gasoline. But even more important to motorists is the extra driving pleasure you enjoy, because today's Signal gasoline helps your engine run so efficiently. So if you want your gas pedal to keep that Christmas morning thrill year-round, how about following Marvin Miller's suggestion? How about giving your car a switch for Christmas? A switch to Signal.
What's Bat's motorboat doing out here beyond the reef? I thought he stuck to shallower water.
He changed his lobster traps day before yesterday.
That's funny. I wonder why.
Because I suggested it, John. Now you can give me a hand up.
That evening, when you explain to Carrie that you failed, there's something almost like contempt in her eyes, isn't there, John? So you make up your mind tomorrow will be the day, no matter what. And by noontime, it looks as though Matt Tuttle was a blessing in disguise at that. You finished your haul when Captain Dan'l decides to give Matt a hand with his. You watch the captain set out alone in the dory. Then you go quickly below to the cabin, where you saw him throw his jacket on the bunk. When he comes back, you'll have the sea chest open and the money in your pocket. And there'll be no more before Lenore dies. You fight your way through the crowds on Greenway Street to Rodolfo. Hesitate a moment in the lobby entrance, realizing that you mustn't be seen. Then you step into one of the several phone booths. Look up Rodolfo's number, dial it. Then a moment later, a girl at the cashier's desk, whom you can see easily from your position in the phone booth, picks up her phone.
Rodolfo's restaurant.
Miss, I wonder if I could talk to the chap who takes the pictures?
Yes? Hold the phone a minute, sir. I'll see if he's around.
Thank you.
You watch from the phone booth as the girl leaves the desk to look for the photographer. You open the door of the warm booth slightly. Mop your forehead as you sit there waiting.
I don't understand.
Suddenly you hear a voice, a very familiar voice, about 20 feet away.
You're absolutely certain that Mr. Markham hasn't been here?
No one is up for you, Miss Butler. I've been right here.
Hope I didn't miss him by waiting in the bar.
Susan Forrester, coming directly toward you. You draw back into the booth, keeping the door partially open, so the light will remain off of you as Susan stops so close by you could reach out and touch her.
She's never kept me waiting like this before. It's been a half hour.
Well, I do not know the gentleman, madam, but...
Oh, I wonder if he got my message. Where's the telephone?
Right here. Oh, someone's in the first seat. Take this one, madam.
Thank you.
You withdraw further into the booth next to the one Susan is using. Even hear her dialing as you anxiously watch the cashier's desk. Then prepare to listen to the conversation you can't prevent, knowing that if they send someone to your room at the sanitarium, you're in a hopeless position.
Hello. Hello, Oakdale. This is Miss Forrester calling again. I left a message earlier in the evening for Mr. Martin. Yes, that's right. No, I don't wish to leave another message. I'd like to talk to him.
If you want, you're free to come aboard.
Breeze has sprung up, Dano.
Barometer's fallen, too. Well, it's time to make our haul anyway. We may catch it on the way back.
Want me to take the wheel, Captain?
No. The less you have to do with this boat, the better.
Oh, look, Captain, I know it looked bad yesterday, but when I picked up your jacket, it was natural.
Oh, I forgot all about that. I got other things on my mind. I reckon we all have.
You mean the storm, Dano? There'll be danger, will there, coming back?
You know, you sound a mite worried, Carrie. Mind if I ask why?
No reason at all, Dano.
Well, as long as I'm at the wheel, you... Well, maybe she'd feel safer, Johnny, if you was to explain that you can navigate these waters as good as me.
Well, sure I can, Captain, but...
The tragedy at the cliffs, at first believed an accident, had turned out to be something else. A clear case of murder. There had been a witness to the shocking affair, who saw the victim pushed off the cliffs. And that witness now sat in a crowded office at police headquarters, white-faced, staring across the room at the killer. The low hum of conversation ceased suddenly as Police Lieutenant Jameson re-entered the room. He stopped to glance at the stenographer's notes for a moment. And then he turned and faced the witness.
Miss Wilson, Nadine Wilson, is that right?
Yes.
You were formerly secretary to Mrs. Blake?
Yes.
How'd you happen to be at the cliffs at the time of the murder? Miss Wilson, I asked you how you...
I was on my way to meet Mr. Blake.
A meeting had been arranged?
No. You see, I had planned to leave town. At the last minute, I changed my mind. I wanted to tell him that.
Uh-huh. I see.
All right, I was in love with Walter Blake, yes.
You knew then Mr. Blake was in the habit of taking a stroll along the cliffs in the evening, and...
Yes. I went there to meet him. That's when I saw them together, Walter and Mrs. Blake. When I saw the killing.
Thank you, Miss Wilson. Mrs. Blake.
Yes, Lieutenant.
You knew about Nadine Wilson and your husband, is that right?
Oh, no, I didn't know anything about that.
Then why did you push him off the cliff, Mrs. Blake?
Money.
Money? But Mrs. Blake, your first husband...
left me a great deal, yes. I spent it all... That's why I married Walter Blake. Recently, for many reasons, I began to suspect he had no more than I had.
I see. So you persuaded your husband to take out a $50,000 insurance policy?
No. No, the insurance was his idea. The joint policy, proceeds payable to the survivor, was my idea.
Why?
Just a gesture of affection, Lieutenant. At the time, I still thought Walter was wealthy. Later, when I was sure he didn't have much money...
And it would have been one or the other if you weren't so yellow.
Is that why you let me come along today, Dano?
I wondered if you wouldn't take a hand sooner or later, Carrie. You came along to give this young feller some nerve.
What are you going to do?
Might kill you, John. Don't like that, eh? Well, I've always been a law-abiding man. I figure the sheriff will know what to do about attempted murder.
And what about me, Dano?
You love this weak-kneed squirt, Carrie?
Yes, Daniel, I always have.
Then, by thunder, you can stand right alongside him in court. Huh, there's Matt's boat coming in. We'll take him aboard.
What does Matt Tuttle know about this, Dan'l?
Nothing, up till now. I don't wash my dirty linen in public.
Not much you don't, you tight-fisted penny-pincher old...
Old miser, huh? Maybe, John. But it appears to me your craving to get your hands on money beats mine all hollow.
What do you mean?
All you know. The way both of you perked up when Matt mentioned my old sea chest that night. Well, it was a sight to see. Right then's when I knew. Right then's when I decided to move it here on board.
A man as mean and suspicious as you would be hard to fool.
My money was the bait I hooked you two on. That sea chest was like a bait bag bulging with herring. And it pulled you into my trap like a couple of greedy lobsters.
So all the time you were...
Giving you a rope to hang yourself. And now let's have no more talk. We'll anchor and wait for Matt. You get up far, John. Be ready to drop that anchor over the side. And I'll come along. Just in hopes you'll give me calls to shoot you the way I'd like.
And so, John, with Captain Dan'l's revolver pointed squarely at your back, you move carefully before him up onto the slippery bow. He keeps his distance. He's not giving you a chance to turn on him, is he, John? Balancing yourself, you squat over the heavy anchor and move the line toward the chop. Then you notice something. As old Dan'l stops walking, watches for the right spot to drop anchor, he steps into a loop of the anchor rope. This gives you an opportunity you hadn't expected. With one move, you shove the anchor over. And the rope tightens around Dan'l's leg, pulling him overboard and into the sea.
Now, now there, Carrie. John and me searched as long as we could. Dan'l's gone. There's nothing more we can do.
Thank you, Matt. I
slide the picture from its envelope. Glance at it in the dim light. Makes you tremble a little, doesn't it, Clint? Sets off the nervous stomach. Lenore, alive only a few hours ago, reaching over to light your cigarette. Seems years now.
You say you went out at 110th Street, mister?
That's right. I'll walk the rest of the way.
You leave the cab several blocks from the sanitarium and wait until it drives off. No one notices you in the darkness as you climb across the terrace, let yourself in through the French window. A few minutes later, you're undressed, back in bed. For the first time now, you're aware of thirst, a raging thirst. You lean back, trembling. The reaction is setting in, isn't it, Clint? The letdown after the terror of the past few hours. You wish you could try to forget it now, but there's one more thing. One more act you must put on. Your hand trembles as you reach for the signal cord to summon the nurse. Your head throbs. The tight, knotted feeling in your stomach is worse than ever. You steel yourself for the next few moments ahead.
Did you ring for me, Mr. Norton?
Yes. Put on the light. Are you a nurse?
Oh. Right. Probably right. Oh, how long have I been asleep?
After 1 o'clock.
Oh. Anyone try to reach me?
I believe there was a call, but the night supervisor...
He wouldn't let them through.
It's the only way, Mr. Markham. You need your rest. You don't look too well.
I don't feel well, nurse.
Is there anything you wanted?
Yes, I'm terribly thirsty. Could I have a glass of water?
Yes, I'll get it for you. And then you'll have to go back to sleep.
I will, nurse.
I'll be right back.
While watching some Christmas shoppers the other day, I couldn't help feeling it's too bad folks aren't as careful in selecting their motor oil as they are in selecting Christmas gifts. If they were, a lot more motorists would switch to New Signal Premium, the heavy-duty type motor oil that reduces engine wear due to lubrication 50%. Just think what a 50% reduction in engine wear can mean to your car's performance and your budget. By reducing engine wear 50%, New Signal Premium should help your car keep its like-new pep and power twice as long. By reducing engine wear 50%, New Signal Premium should help your car go twice as far before needing an expensive engine overhaul. Yet in the face of increasing costs, these important benefits are yours to enjoy at no increase in price at Signal Service Station. Aren't those reasons aplenty to decide right now to get your next oil change at a Signal station? Get it changed to New Signal Premium, the heavy-duty type Signal motor oil that reduces engine wear due to lubrication 50%.
So it's over now, Clint. And you're back in your bed at the sanitarium. You're certain that Susan, the nurse, and attendants all believe you've been in your room all evening. You're weak and trembling, your stomach worse than ever. But you can lean back, relax now, and rest, quite sure that you're safe. You're certain no one knows you left the room. And the only thing that can still connect you to the murder of Lenore Stark is the picture of the two of you taken at Rodolfo's. The picture in negative in the brown envelope lying on the stand beside your bed. You waver dizzily as you reach for them. Slide them from the envelope. Strike a match. The negative goes up in flames quickly. Then you touch the match to the upper left corner of the picture. The glossy print starts to burn. The flames moving down, crawling across the picture of your face. And then Lenore, finally down to her hand, holding a match to your cigarette. That's when you see it, Clint. Something you should have seen before. Her other hand. Her left hand poised directly over your drink, dropping a capsule into it.
Oh. No wonder. No wonder she wanted the picture.
I'm not telling anyone. I don't have to.
The flame becomes a blur, Clint. A cloud engulfs you. The walls of the room and the bed draw away, fading, fading.
I brought your water, Mr. Markham. Mr. Markham, did you fall asleep?
Water. No. Water.
What is it, Mr. Markham? Is something wrong? Mr. Markham.
No. It's too late.
Mr. Markham, you've got to try. You've got to sit up. Please, Mr. Markham. Please, please. I came back with the water, Doctor. I found that Mr. Markham had fainted. I tried to rouse him.
It's all right, nurse. You couldn't do anything for him. I don't understand it.
He's dead.
Yes. And judging from his color and expression, I think we'll find it was some sort of slow-acting poison.
But there isn't any poison here. Where in the world could he have gotten it, Doctor? Why, he hasn't put his foot out of this room all night.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Signal Oil Company has asked me to remind you, during this busy pre-holiday season, it's especially important to drive at sensible speed, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations so that some avoidable accident doesn't mar your Merry Christmas. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman as the Whistler, Ted Osborne, Betty Lou Gerson, Monty Margetts, G.G. Pearson, Jerry Hausner, and Ted Von Els. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Joel Malone and Harold Swanton. Music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler was entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember to tune in at this same time next Sunday when the Signal Oil Company will bring you another strange story by The Whistler entitled Curiosity Killed a Cat, in which greed and desire set off a murder on the high seas, resulting in a daring flight through a storm by the killer. Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. Stay tuned now for Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is the CBS Radio Network.